Cynthia McKenney is our next speaker, and Cynthia is going to talk about essential accessibility elements for online instruction.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. As probably many of you have started to hear throughout your discussions in your different organizations, universities, you probably have been hearing a lot more about closed captioning and how to do accessibility for students within your classrooms. Well, the way you want to find out about it is in that setting and not in any other setting. Like, you don't want to be in the New York Times, like Harvard and MIT were, where they were sued over a lack of closed captioning. They have a very large program there, and they didn't have that, and so they were sued over the anti-discrimination laws for failing to provide that closed captioning in their podcasts also. And you don't want the Department of Justice then coming in there and making decisions about whether or not you were correct in doing that, and so the United States did reach a settlement with the providers of the MOOCs at this point, through their EdX Inc., which is what MIT and Harvard had joined together and formed for their online materials. So they ended up going through the Department of Justice and had to pay all kinds of fines and whatnot in order to address that. Isn't this a fun talk? Okay, so then you look at this and you go, okay, I don't have to worry about this, until you look and see if your university is here. Higher education accessibility lawsuits that have been filed in the last few years. We have Arizona State, Florida State, Louisiana Tech. We've got community colleges. We have Princeton, Penn State. What is this telling us? It's telling us that we have advocacy groups. They're going out and they're starting to put in lawsuits against all universities, forcing them to make sure that they're meeting these criteria. They don't even have to have a student at any of these universities. They can still file the suits if all the materials are not there. And this is not just for closed captioning. This will also be for the visually impaired. So any type of accessibility. And so you think, well, you know, this is absolutely why I am not going to teach online. Okay? So the good news and the bad news is that it will happen to you in your classroom also. You can have an on-campus course and still not meet these requirements. All right? I love unfunded mandates as much as you do. So Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1998 says electronic and info technology used to provide accessibility to people with disabilities. Doesn't say anything there about in an online course. So this is going to be anyone sitting in your classroom. Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, no qualified students with a disability shall be discriminated against in a post-secondary program or activity. So, yes, that blind student will have to make it through what he plans. Title II of the American with Disabilities Act of 1990. People with disabilities are just as effective with communication devices and tools. One of the best discussions we had on all of this closed captioning at Texas Tech is, okay, we're really going to closed caption neurosurgery discussions. I mean, are we really going to have a neurosurgeon? And the answer is, the Department of Education and the Department of Justice says, yes, you will. Doesn't mean that they'll ever have a job in that, but you will provide access anyway. So it's enforced by the Department of Justice and by the U.S. Office of Civil Rights, and so it really doesn't matter if you are worried about somebody with a chainsaw on a tree or a neurosurgeon or a dentist or whether or not you have anyone in your class with a disability. It just means that you are out there ready to have a lawsuit if you do not comply with these standards. And the grace period is supposed to be January of 2018. So a lot of times, a lot of universities haven't done a lot to get this type of thing moving, and then all of a sudden they sat us down one day and said, okay, we're going to do this. And it's kind of a painful process if you're not prepared for it. So the accessibility standard basically says accessible means a person with a disability is afforded the opportunity to acquire the same information, engage in the same interactions, and enjoy the same services as a person without a disability in an equally effective and equally integrated manner and substantially equivalent ease of use. That makes our laboratories a really big issue for us. If you're trying to teach tree climbing, or if you're doing pruning, or if you're whatever you're doing, you're going to have a lot more issues when you're trying to figure out how to accomplish this. And this big one happened with Louisiana Tech, and so they had to have a settlement on that one. So who's responsible? Is it the university? Is it the college? Is it the dean? It's you, all right? If you're in the classroom, you're responsible. Now, they may take everyone else in the lawsuit with you, but you're going to be also. How long does it take? Well, we have done a little work. I have spent the last year sweating away on this, trying to figure out how to do this. And it really takes an incredible amount of time if you're trying to do research and if you're trying to do anything else, like, you know, put your class online, do some media site work or whatever. 10 days or less if you ask a vendor to do it, okay? So let's say that, well, this situation happened. One of my colleagues had a student show up in a class, didn't know anything about it. Student comes in, hearing impaired. So we have 10 days to get all of those PowerPoint presentations happening in a live classroom, not online, posted for this student, 10 days, okay? Doesn't matter if we have a signer. Doesn't matter if we have someone taking expert notes, because that student designated the way they wanted to have it was closed captioned, okay? Because a lot of deaf people don't even read sign. So that's no longer going to last for us, having a signer come in. So we turned around and sent it out for that, and it basically cost us $2,000 for that student to get up to exam one. And then we realized we were in really big trouble. The department was going to end up paying more for his education than he was going to pay for his education. And I don't know how your budgets are, but our budget's always such that there's no way we can afford to do this, all right? Then we sat down and we hired a graduate student that's been helping me, and please try and get someone in your area. I had someone who's got range and wildlife background in soils, which isn't quite horticulture, but at least they are at least somewhat knowledgeable, but not quite enough. 6 to 7 minutes to caption 1 minute of speech. So even when I'm doing a really good job, and she's from Texas too, so the so she doesn't sit there and go, what? Okay, 6 to 7 minutes to close caption 1 minute of speech. Okay, so $3 to $7 a minute if you have a company do it. You can pay a graduate stipend to do it. One of the things that was nice is that I found out that if I make my modules more than 15 minutes but less than 40 minutes, I can, if they're not in a hurry and backed up, get the folks at Accessibility Services to have a deaf or a blind student, you know, they have to give the right one, to do that for us and put it out on my media site. So basically what I'm doing is I'm taking like last year's modules and I'm chopping those things up into exact right amount of minutes, because if it's a few seconds too short or long, they're not going to do it because they can't afford it either, okay? And then I'm sending them through at least a semester ahead of time to see if I can get them closed captioned in case I get someone. And then, you know, the next person comes up and goes, I've got someone in my class, what am I going to do? So it's a kind of an insurance policy. You're going to have to figure out how you're going to get around this, because we're not immune. So one of the things about closed captioning is that it is a skill and an art, just like horticulture. You have to have knowledge, and you also have to have some flair for it. The captioner has to decide what's important. So when I clear my throat, that doesn't matter. But if you're watching a movie and you hear that creaking door open, you know, and it's supposed to make it intense or whatever, that's important, and you have to put it in there. So they have to know what sounds are important and which ones aren't. They can convey the meaning and context. So like if you hear a dog bark in a movie, it can be the warning, right? So they have to know what, they have to deliver all those types of things about, you know, saying creepy whatever, bark dog barking. Well, you don't think that's happening in your class until you're showing some kind of video where something's going on and it's got to do with equipment or something, and then all of a sudden those sounds are making some difference. So they contextualize, they formalize, and they clarify. And they also do this really nice job of taking out all my ums, because apparently I go and a lot, okay? And then the quality has to be there. They have to have some accuracy. And so I go back through and I have to check over them and correct things and whatnot. And I want you to know that that's a big deal when somebody doesn't know the jargon. All right, so I go back through, and there's a lot of funny things that it makes me realize that we do have a lot of technical language that we use. You need to be consistent. You need to speak clearly. It needs to be readable, and it needs to equal what's happening in the classroom. So, you know, does this matter when I do this? No. But when I talk about how big something is, yes. Now all of a sudden the hand wave makes a difference. So some of the things that you have to do for the visually impaired is your documents are going to have to go through a JAWS reader or something like that. So you need to have your documents that you hand out in class, okay, as a doc or a docx in style format. So you don't just start typing your document like you've done low these many years. You go and you select title, subheading, whatever it is, and main body and all those types of things, and you use those template formats so that as the reader goes through and reads it, it says major heading, subheading, body, you know, and that helps them understand what's being read to them through the reader, okay? You want to save it as a Word doc or docx or as a PDF. There's all of a sudden a whole lot of things happen about how you might want to, just your syllabus. I was amazed what they did to my syllabus whenever they turned it into a template. No flashing or blinking colors. All right, so I'm breaking almost every rule on this because I'm using red and all that kind of stuff, so you want to watch all that. You want to alt text. And so what happens is that if you have a document and you have an image in it, and I do everything with images because, I mean, otherwise I think you get bored. So you got to have beautiful flowers. I enjoy the tomatoes tremendously. Okay, that is a decorative image. So you would have to alt tag that decorative image of tomatoes on a vine so that they don't have to worry about, oh, do I have to remember what that is? All right, and then you have to tell them all about every kind of graph or chart. Then you need to save, if you're doing a PowerPoint, you need to save it in an accessible format. And there's a nice little choice in the bottom whenever you're saving in PowerPoint. Do you want to save it as accessible? Never noticed that button in my life. It is there. Okay, trust me. You want your videos to have synchronized captioning. So here I am going through all this, making these media site things, trying to be this wonderful teacher. I'm really close to wanting to just read a document. Okay. And you want to avoid clickers. I got you. So think about this. Here's an image. Do you really want to have to describe that microscope? Think really hard about, you know, where is that stuff located and how is it arranged? So start early, describe your images, and think really hard about why I'm putting that image in there. Invest in a good microphone. That's really important. And the captioners are best if they've had some experience. So why are you putting those images in there? I like to put in images, but these are ones I would not want to describe. All right? So think really hard about, even though it's a fun image, why are you putting it in there? And with that, I'm going to close. And this little URL, if you want that, it gives you a list of all the rules and regs. It gives you access to all this closed captioning technology. And yes, it is branded by Texas Tech. But it's open to anyone that you want to look at it, and you can get a lot of stuff. And I do want to tell you there's one thing on the front that's pretty good, and that is that probably by the summer, y'all know the computer Watson. Okay, Watson is the one that won Jeopardy. They're training it to be a voice captioner, and they're doing it in multiple languages. And Texas Tech is a trial site for media site running through different people with different languages when they speak. With some different, and whether they're English as a second language person, multiple speakers, or technical jargon, and they're loading all this stuff through this computer so that we'll start that auto learning process, and hopefully within a year we'll have Watson doing closed captioning.